Welcome back to another episode of On The Air, a podcast brought to you by Stormwater. On The Air brings together key industry figures, colleagues and customers to explore the latest insight and stories. Our host, Paula Palmer, will be joined each episode by a guest co-host, as well as other special guests, bringing their expertise and experience to our conversations about what matters most in social housing.
Hello and welcome to Stonewater's On The Air podcast. I'm your host Paula Palmer and this is the first episode of our new season. I can't believe I've been doing this for 3 years already, but we're now on season six. We'll have six new episodes talking about the key issues in social housing and, as ever, we'll be joined by customers, colleagues, contractors and peers from across the sector. Today, though, we're talking about trust. The relationship between social landlords and tenants has come under scrutiny in recent years, with concerns about service quality, communication and engagement. So I'm going to be asking, can social landlords rebuild trust with customers and create relationships that are respectful and responsive? To get stuck into this topic, I'm delighted to be joined by David Ripley, our Chief Operating Officer here at Stonewater, Jo Allen, who is Head of Member Relations at the National Housing Federation, and Joseph DeVille, man of many titles. He is a member of the Stop Social Housing Stigma Committee, the National Tenants Voice Group, as well as being a tenant, resident, customer, whatever your terminology is, in social housing. So thank you all for being here. Let's get going and meet you properly as we chat. So welcome to On The Air, David. Could you give our listeners a quick intro to you and your role at Stonewater, please?
Thank you, Paula. It's great to be here with everyone today and hopefully a great session ahead. I joined Stonewater in May of this year. So been here about 5-6 months now, really getting stuck into some of our key challenges and opportunities around our customer service. So my role day in, day out is striving to make sure that we're doing the best for our customers and everything that we're trying to do, whether that be from our repairs service all the way through to our housing services and our support services as well.
Lovely. So getting straight into it, David, what do you think about the customer and social landlord relationship right now? And what does a good one look like to you?
I think the relationship between landlord and in customer, resident, tenant, as people refer to it, is probably a little bit strained at the moment. And in being in some difficult places, we've had a number of difficult events for the sector to deal with. And I think that's tested a lot of us about what is really at the core of what we do and in how we do it for residents. And I think when we talk about trust, sometimes we talk about trust like it's this far-fetched kind of idea, but reality is that trust comes down to us as providers delivering on our actions for our customers and making sure that we have them at the forefront of our mind every day. And really that basic principle is, did we follow through on our promises and deliver what we said we would do when we said we would do it? And I think one of the things that we're struggling with is providers, and I know at Stonewater we're addressing this challenge head on, is making sure that we listen empathetically and also that we embed consistency in the way that we want to deliver our services going forward. So I think whilst the relationship has probably had its turbulent times, we're looking to really push that on at Stonewater. And I know there's lots of work across the sector at how we focus on getting those relationships right.
Great, brilliant. So, you know, tell us a bit more about that. How are we going to do it? We've got 93,000 customers. How does that play out in practice?
Yeah, I think in terms of when you think about 93,000 people, that's nearly one Wembley Stadium, or where you come from, where I come from, two St James's Parks, if you like. Although I don't want to talk about football at the moment. But I think when we think about any interaction we have with customers day in, day out, I think one of the keys to how we help to build that trust is to have that proactive engagement in that visibility on what matters. And it's Stonewater, we're doing a lot of work about how we can get more visible and more local and more connected into our customers day in, day out. And myself and the team have very much got that at our heart. We know we need to be better at Stonewater on how we do that, but that proactive engagement and that visibility will make sure that we can hear our customers, see our customers and respond to the challenges and the opportunities that they face. I think alongside that, though, we also need to be honest, and that's honest as providers about the challenges that we face. In when we look at that in a Stonewater context, we know that we've got challenges around repairs, we've got challenges around complaints, And we've also got challenges around the feedback that we've had from customers about being visible itself. And I think the more we talk about those challenges openly and how we can address them, the more cohesion we'll build between ourselves as a landlord and between our customers. And I think that is a lot of that is underpinned by reassuring our customers, by showing our actions to be true and that we follow through on them. And I think we've seen a lot recently around community cohesion, both locally and nationally in the press. And I think the more we can do to work together, to collaborate on some of those challenges and those opportunities, we can build that trust and take us forward in that open way where together we both see both parts of those issues. And we use elements such as tenant scrutiny as we use to really drive us forward on that journey.
Okay, thanks, David. I'm going to get Joe to come in and add on that point. So Joe's our guest from the National Housing Federation. So welcome, Joe. Thanks for being on with us. And we'll start as we did with David by getting to know a bit more about you and what you do.
Hi, Paula. Thanks so much for having me on today. Great to be with you all. So I'm, as you said, I'm head of member relations at the NHF. I've been there for 10 years now. So again, don't know where the time goes. And I lead on all of our work around customer experience and resident engagement.
Brilliant. Okay, so adding to what David said, you know, about the challenges and ways of building trust and respectful relationships, do you agree? And what examples have you seen of landlords doing this well?
Yeah, I think definitely agree. I mean, we've seen, as David recognised, like it has been a really challenging time for the sector around all of this. You know, the Best Social Housing Review kind of really highlighted that sort of building trust and honest and open communications with between landlords and residents is really important. And, you know, we've seen that kind of where that goes wrong, you know, in the tragedies around Grenfell and around Awa Bishak, you know, it is so fundamental to kind of having a good relationship and kind of really doing what we need to as landlords. You know, so I think definitely challenges, but the sector has really addressed those and is really making headroads. It's not job done. There's still lots to do. But we, following Grenfell, the tragedy at Grenfell, we worked with residents and with landlords across the sector to develop the Together with Tenants framework, which was a really, really important development in the sector that just really highlighted the need to have a really open, honest conversation with residents, with customers, tenants, about how they can influence decision making and how their views can be heard. So I think that was really, really fundamental sort of change in the sector and has actually led on to loads of initiatives. And we've got loads of examples, case studies on our website. I think the important thing about it is it isn't a kind of one size fits all. It isn't just a tenant engagement. It's not a list of things you need to do and then it's done. It's about thinking about how it works for your organisation. So whether you've got 93,000 customers or, you know, 500.
Yeah. I agree, yeah. And interesting you sort of say there about all these bad events that have brought this change about, and we'll always hear from the people who aren't happy more so than the people are who are happy, but good to see that it's really been taken on board. And I'm going to come back to you about the Together with Tenants report in a little while. But first, we're going to meet Joseph as our final guest to get a customer's perspective. So Joseph is, as we've mentioned, a great advocate for tenants, been a member of the National Tenants Voice and Stop Social Housing Stigma. So hello to Joseph. Thanks for coming on with us. Tell us some more about you. What's inspired you to be so involved, and perhaps what does genuine involvement look like to you?
Yeah, hi, I'm Joe. I think I've met Joe before, Joe. I worked with the National Housing Federation with it Together with the Tenants programme. I did that for about 5 years. I really enjoyed doing that, and it was a real change in the sector. We, you know, while I was with them, I think we got up to like 2 million residents that were signed up to it. So it was a really good piece of work. I feel there's a real impetus that we have more involvement within our housing associations and not just be a tokenistic view, just to make, you know, tick a few boxes so it covers their KPIs and their, you know, their tenant satisfaction measures and, you know, all the other things that they're having to do now because the regulator has said this is what needs doing. I feel sometimes that they can miss out on the important thing, which is the word from the customer. We live in their homes. It's not you know, it's not a difficult thing to say, actually, would you live in the home of a social housing tenant? I really struggle with that because I know a lot of housing association managers and things like that would probably come into our homes and go, actually, I wouldn't live in that. It's not good enough. And I think that's where it needs to change. I do like the idea of the new standards that are coming into place. I just see a lot of difference coming. It's just taken a while to actually start moving. And I felt together with tenants policy was something that really opened up the eyes of housing associations. A really important part of housing associations, very much so in my mind, is the scrutiny panels, because I am part of that within my own HA. And I feel that we have a big say and we make big changes at every level for the business. And I've noticed with my HA, which is an ALMO, which is an arm length managed organisation, they're more interested in what we've got to say now than they have been in the last 5 years. So it's just really exciting times that we live in. And to me, I also see that tenants are partners. We're not just a tick box. We need to be part and parcel of everything that happens within housing associations, that they see us as a partnership and to see us as that critical friend. And I always see it that way. We want to be that friend and come across that actually, if you listen to us, you can do better. And you can see it in the sector. There's big changes happening. People are getting pushed up the ladder, you know, getting C1s and all that. And it's just nice to see.
That's really good, Joseph, that you've really started to notice that customers have been listened to. So obviously, you know, all these initiatives are having an impact. So talking about initiatives, let's go back to that Together with Tenants framework you mentioned earlier. What is it and what impact is it having? Perhaps, Joe, you can start by telling us a bit more about it.
Yeah, sure. So as I said, it's cross-sector initiative. We developed it working with the tenant advisory panel and residents across the country, as well as landlords. And it's essentially, it's a framework. It's a way of thinking that embeds the culture around resident engagement within an organisation. So it's not, as I said before, it's not a list of, you know, you need to have a customer scrutiny committee and you need to do this. It's not a list of groups or actions. It's actually a framework for the whole organisation. And I think what's really, really important in here, and where we've seen this being implemented really successfully, is where that the buy-in for this starts at board level and exec level and then cascades down, and it really sets the culture for the organisation. So it's not just tenant engagement is seen as something that one team does in the organisation that's got tenant engagement somewhere in the title of the team. Like it's really part of what the organisation does and how decisions are made in that organisation. And I think it's interesting because this was developed before the consumer standards came in, when the consumer standards were still being developed. But there's really clear linkages now with what we now know as the consumer standards. So I know I've heard the regulator speak many times in kind of what they're looking for in the consumer standards is that golden thread of resident voice throughout the organisation. So not, you know, not just something that happens on a Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. and that's it, job done. But actually, how is that used? And that's very much what Together with Tenants was about. But now, what the regulator's looking for when they're assessing the consumer standards.
Brilliant, Joseph. Do you want to add to anything to that?
Yeah, you know, it's just about that joining up. I really enjoyed Together with Tenants as a policy. It was just nice to see that housing associations really wanted to get involved with it, and the difference it was making at every level was brilliant. They had to adjust it for smaller housing associations, but it still worked for them. It worked for every, you know, every single housing association that was around in the country. So and then to see it's even said about in the government white paper about Together with Tenants being a real focal part of it, so it was nice to bring that in.
Yeah. What was your involvement in it, Joseph? Did you sort of help build the policy? And
I was on the tenant advisory panel, yeah, for 5 years. I did, you know, I started off as the vice chair of the group, which was really nice. And we actually had a lot of meetings with different partners within the NHF. and actually helped build the policy from the ground up. So it didn't even exist when I got there, but by the end of it was an amazing piece of work, and I felt really honoured to be part of that. So yeah.
Brilliant, one to be proud of. Thanks, Joseph.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add around the Together with Tenants framework, another really important thing where we've seen, or element where we've seen it work well, is where organisations kind of very much come from at it as it's never job done. Like, there's always more you can do, mm-hmm. and you can have the framework, but it's about that constant feedback loop, listening, improving, and just being really open to new ways of doing things. So again, it's what makes Together with Tenants so exciting, is that it's alive thing. It's not just something you do and put on the shelf, which I think is really important in making it work well.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Jo. David, so thinking about customers shaping decisions and voices being representative of all of our customers, how do you see customer involvement shaping decisions at both governance and sort of level and day to day? And some examples from Stonewater, perhaps.
Yeah, no, I think it's some great points that both Jo and Joseph have made. And I think the real one is around partnership in working together on some of the challenges. And I think when you look at the Together with Tenants charter, I think that relationship is a key part of that. So at Stonewater, we've very much embraced that, and we have a customer committee at the top of our organisation in terms of governance, where customers are part of that committee and help shape the direction that we're going with key initiatives such as our model for service delivery, our customer strategy, and how we'll work and interact and do the best for customers. But not only do we have that, we have a scrutiny panel that help keep us true to our word, and are our services working in the way that they should be working. And there's a lot of customers involved in that who help do reviews of our services and tell us the good, the bad, and the indifferent. And that's something that's very close to our heart, to help us really influence our services and really look at where we can do better. And we always want to work very closely with customers, because at the end of the day, when we're trying to look at moving anything forward and improving it, it's customers that we have to do that for. And if they're feeling that pain, we're feeling that pain and in the same way further down. So what we've done with our mix, from sort of that highest governance level through scrutiny panels and through our sort of more day-to-day involved customers, where we have an online community or customer hub as an example, is really sort of engage those customers on the issues that matter to them at the time that matters to them. And I think that's what that is helping us to do, is find that real balance and having that formalized governance approach, but also as Joseph touched on, really connecting with customers and making sure that they're at the heart of what we're trying to change, and putting that local input into the way our services run.
Thanks, David. So from my perspective, that sounds quite extensive. I don't know. I don't think everybody wants to be on a committee panel member, but maybe we've got a survey that they can fill in and get their feedback that way. Jo, what do you think? You'll have a bit more insight across the sector and maybe some examples of people doing particularly well or some creative approaches.
Yeah, so I mean, it's an ongoing sort of challenge, isn't it? Drawing in those voices that you don't often hear from, and I don't think anyone's kind of got it absolutely solved. It's a tricky one, but we do see interesting things. I mean, it's absolutely kind of what David was saying around kind of do it in a way that suits people's lives and not, you know, not the landlord. It's about getting their views. So making sure that you're creating a range of opportunities for them to influence, whether you've got, you know, 10 minutes or an hour and a half that you can spare, just being flexible in that regard. So that's kind of a really fundamental principle, you know. But I think what I see work really well is where you kind of have a longer term vision for groups that don't normally engage. So, for example, young people, it really, really hard. They're busy, you know, they don't necessarily prioritise kind of talking to their landlord. So thinking about building trust with them in a way that works for them. So kind of, you know, run youth related activities, things that do engage them around sport or media or whatever. And then using that to build trust to then get them engaged in perhaps what they might see a bit more boring, but is actually really important to sort of how their services are run. So thinking about it kind of in that way, not just, and again, it goes back to that, none of it's a box ticking exercise. It's about investing in resident engagement for the longer term.
Okay, great. I hadn't really thought about doing sporting activities or sort of engaging people in that way, but yeah, I would definitely be more engaged in that kind of activity than thinking I've got to sign up for an hour and a half board meeting. No thanks. So, Joseph, when we were chatting before recording, one of the things you pointed out as being a barrier to trust and respectful relationships was waiting months for repairs to be completed. And it's, tell us some more about how that experience affects trust and what can landlords do to rebuild it?
It's a difficult one because repairs are always an issue with cost. One of the biggest issues we have with my housing association is the low rents, because we are, you know, originally council owned. We still are council owned. So you can imagine council rents are a lot lower than housing association rents, which makes it really complicated if something severe goes wrong, like a roof repair, or say if you've got to replace a kitchen or a bathroom. I've learned a lot since I've been with the council that a lot of their struggles are down to the low rents, the amount of money they got coming in, and that means it has an effect on the repairs. We're in a position at the moment that the council's not doing brilliantly money-wise, and they've put us on a temporary repairs contract at the minute. We had to take on some new repairs contractors, and now because of the temporary policy that they've put in place, they're saying that you could be waiting up to 9 months for a normal standard repair, which is not something that's major. But, you know, if it's a major thing, it still gets done as an emergency. But anything that is a standard repair, we have to wait. And that can really upset some people because, you know, a repair like a strip light or, you know, or even some other, you know, broken window handles or something that's very minor to you or me, and some of us was actually go, well, I'll just go out and do it myself, save the council a hassle and, you know, watch some YouTube videos and see how you do it, which is probably not always the best thing to do, but, you know, we all do it sometimes. But it does cause a bit of a barrier, I feel, because I want to trust my housing association. I think they're doing well, but they are in a difficult position, whereas we've got 10,000 homes where are run by the council here, and that's covering a massive great area. So if you understand it from that point of view, getting vans to different jobs, the costs are just extortionate, really, for getting around. And I think to myself, that's another cost to housing associations to run, you know, the vans to get around the county. So it's like, how do we change that? How do we come together as, you know, as a group of tenants on scrutiny or on whatever you're doing with your HA to actually go, well, have you thought about doing this? Would you consider? And the thing that I really, really valued is that I was involved in the application process and looking through the people that were going to be taken on as our new repairs contractors. And actually they got us involved in the interview process, which I thought was really, really nice. And that's a real change, because whereas before the boards would decide or, you know, managers would decide, it was now going, actually, we need tenants involved. You know, we can't just do this on our own, because at the end of the day, we're the ones that accept them through the door. And if we're not comfortable with them, we need to say something. So this is about understanding that. And also tenants also need to understand that some things aren't always a first time fix. Sometimes they need to come back, they need to get parts. You know, there could be a reason that your boiler's broken. It might not be as simple as, you know, the gas isn't working or, you know, the water's not getting into the tank. It could be like a part that's really needed. And some of the, you know, some of the boilers that are in these houses can be really old. So trying to get hold of the parts is quite a complex thing. But sometimes they haven't got the money to actually replace the boiler. So it's that whole keeping it going for a bit longer. So it's about that joined up thinking of how do we make this work to make things better for everyone.
So would you say that explanation that you've given is more you being a reasonable person and understanding the processes that goes on in having to have budget, having to get contractors, knowing that there are going to be delays and things? Is that you and the way you've thought, or have you been told that by your council? So they've communicated with you?
Yeah, it's very much because I'm an involved customer.
Yeah,
I know about what's going on in the back of house, whereas somebody who is not involved, they probably think, well, I pay my rent, why aren't you fixing it?
Why aren't you fixing my tap?
That's the issue all the time. It's like, you know, a dripping tap. I know it sounds like a minor thing, but not everybody likes to fix a dripping tap. I mean, I'm just about to do the whole, we've got to put our heating on soon, and so I'm going to have to check the radiators.
Bleeding radiators.
And I've never bled a radiator, and I'm like panicking about it. So I'm like, I know it sounds really silly, but the things that we just take for granted aren't always as simple.
So you think we could be a bit more upfront about why delays might happen, why contracts are put in place? You know, even as a big housing association with lots of rents to collect, there's still a budget and it's still, you know, a finite amount.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's a big thing behind, you know, rent that isn't being paid, you know, the debts that have been building up with people that just are struggling with, you know, everything at the moment, with the cost of living and, you know, people's job security and all that stuff. It's really complicated to say, actually, from one month we can afford it, and the following month they could be ill, they'll be on sick pay, and they could be really struggling with their bills. So it's about having that conversation and not just hiding and going, actually, I don't want to deal with this. Let's talk to my housing association, make an agreement, see if there's some way forward, rather than going, actually, you know, don't talk to them. They don't want to know. They don't want to listen when we say something. So maybe we should be the same and not listen. And we don't want to tell them when we've got something going on in our lives. So it's about bringing it back to those basics. I think it's very important that we need to be talking to each other and no longer doing this hiding behind board members and, you know, and managers that just want to keep the books level.
Yeah.
It's a joined up approach.
Okay, thanks, Joseph. So, David, you spoke about the need for sort of faster feedback loops in the beginning of our conversation. What changes can be made, or are we making, so customer feedback leads more quickly to visible action?
Yeah, no, thanks, Paula. I think Joseph's hitting a couple of key points that feed into that, and I think there'll never be enough money to do everything that needs to be done in the housing sector with the challenges that we have for the provision of new homes, the improvement in existing homes. And often it gets talked about like it's a kind of a trade-off between one element and the other element. And I think when we think about the majority of services that customers access, in 9 times out of 10 is the repairs service, I think there's a key facet of that is about how we communicate with each other about what is going on. And sometimes my experiences tell me that as long as customers know exactly what's happening, when it's going to happen, they're prepared to accept that things may take a little bit longer. I think where you get your complaints is when there's big gaps in that silence, and it can last for weeks, if not months on end. And ultimately people get frustrated and people complain. And that is entirely understandable, but it's also entirely avoidable as well at the same time. And I think as Stonewater, we're going to do more over the coming sort of 6 to 12 months to improve the way that we're approaching that. And a big part of that is about getting that real-time feedback from residents, whether they be involved or non-involved customers. And we're looking at how we can get that real-time feedback coming back from each interaction that our customers have with us, whether that be through email, text messaging, or face-to-face. And importantly, when you're getting that feedback, I think it's important that we act quickly and timely, because I think there's nothing worse as a customer if you've received a satisfaction survey and something hasn't gone wrong, and say you've waited 30 days for it, and then you tell somebody that it's still not quite done and I'm still not quite happy about it. And then it either A, goes into a black hole, or we tell you we'll be in touch in another 30 days and then we may or may not get in touch with you at that point. So I think that's partly about how we act quickly, but it's also importantly, I think, for customers, how we improve our approach to responsiveness. And I think at the heart of every interaction we have with a customer, and Joseph touched on this, I think there is a lot of understanding that things won't always go perfectly. And this isn't just a housing thing. This is any other organisation that you may interact with. Everyone endeavours to do their best every single time. But sometimes things go wrong and you get things that fall in between the gaps. And again, I think people will understand as long as you're clear and you communicate what those issues are. But if we talk in words like what Joe says, my manager says, or my policy says, or the budgets in this team or the budgets in that team, I think that's what turns customers off. And ultimately, it doesn't matter what team it's in, the solution needs to be found and in the issue resolved for the customer. So I think really responding to that feedback and driving that through each of our colleagues in Stormwater, but as a mantra through the sector, I don't think would hold us in bad stead.
Okay, thanks, David. That's great. So, Joe, we've recently been graded by the regulator. We got a C2, where they recognised room to improve in Stonewater's repairs, but also praised our customer influence. So how important is it for landlords to get both of those things right at the same time?
Really, really important. And I think both David and Joseph have kind of covered this around, you know, repairs are absolutely fundamental to trust. And actually, you can have all the kind of customer engagement strategies and whatever in the world, but actually, if you're not kind of getting the basics right, it undermines all of that. So the two are really, really important to focus on. I think, you know, the sector kind of absolutely recognises how important it is to get repairs right. You know, it sounds like Stonewater's doing a lot across the sector. Last year, the sector spent 8.8 billion on repairs and maintenance. So the investment is there, but it's still, you know, there's still challenges. And I think it's not just about having the right tools and getting the job done. As David said, it is around communication and kind of having that open dialogue. And I think one thing to look at, there was a useful report that came out earlier in the year by the Housing Ombudsman around what they're seeing around complaints and repairs and kind of very much focusing on trust in repairs. And, you know, I'd really recommend people in the sector look at that, look at some of the recommendations and some of the learnings from across the sector on that. I think another thing that is really, really important in this is going back to that culture piece that we were talking about before and how valuing residents and customers and kind of that respect has to be fundamental to the way the organisation operates. I think when it comes to repairs, it's also really important to think about your contractors if you use them in to deliver services, because often, you know, those, you know, whether they're in-house or they're contractors, the people going around to fix the boiler or, you know, fix the leaking tap are the only person that the customer will meet for, you know, for a period of time from the landlord. So they, you know, kind of making sure that that culture is embedded right through the organisation so that customers feel valued, they feel kind of well communicated with, kept in the loop, is just really, really important and kind of brings us back to where we started this conversation, really.
Great. Yeah, I really hadn't thought about sort of like that contractor being the only contact or person. They're the face of your business at that point in time, aren't they? So yeah, we need them to show the same values and respect and communication. Otherwise, it'll come back to us. So, Joseph, you said that the regulator now has teeth. So how do you see regulation working alongside tenant scrutiny to deliver real accountability?
You know, I've said before, and I really mean this, is that the regulator is now a critical friend with power to downgrade. And I don't see that as a bad thing. I know that David and yourself have said that Stonewater have dropped to a C2. But sometimes that's not a bad thing. That means then you need to relook at your policies, relook at how you're doing things and actually pull your socks up. Not as in a way of to say, actually, we've been doing well, and we've been floating and everything's been fine and we've been in the C1s, we're really doing well, and all of a sudden we've been dropped. But that should really tell you, actually, there's something not quite working 100%. You're down at, you know, your 90% of efficiency. So there's 10% there that you can pull back. And I don't see that as a bad thing. And, you know, bringing along your scrutiny panel, it was nice that David said that he's working with his scrutiny panel within Stonewater. And it's really nice to hear that they want to listen. And I think that's really important. The scrutiny panels have a lot of say within HAs. And I think we really need to see that working really well. It's something that the regulator wants. The ombudsman want us on board as, you know, so we can actually help in all areas of the business. It's not just about us being tenants anymore. You know, the engagement is really important. So we really want to push landlords to improve. And that is happening. It just sometimes when you get knocked down, as we all know, when something goes wrong and we get pushed down or we get, it's a bit like going in the playground and being beaten up by a bully. It's that whole getting up again and brushing yourself down. And then going, actually, maybe there was a reason he beat me up, you know, and then think about that and go, actually, should I have said something differently? Should I have done something? But you know what I mean? It's about that. It's about that joined up thing of let's work together. Let's make us better. I mean, I've seen some brilliant news today of a local housing association in Cornwall, which is known as Coastline Housing. And they've just been given a C1. So, I mean, it's exciting to hear that locally it's happening. And, you know, you think to yourself, it can happen.
Brilliant. Thanks, Joseph. So we're not seeing fail on our end of report paper. We're seeing room to improve. Excellent. OK, so David, looking ahead to next year and our room to improve, what change do you want customers to notice that shows Stonewater is listening and acting on what we say?
Yeah, no, you'll not hear any argument from me, Joseph, about what you're saying. I think the day we stop striving to improve services for customers will be a bad day for the sector, irrelevant of what level of grading we get, whether that be a C1 or a C2. So I think with that in mind, I think the sort of the next year ahead, we are visibly committing to improving our approach to core areas like repairs, complaints, and continuously evolving our approach to customer voice in our services. We're in the midst of working with customers and colleagues from across the business to devise our new customer strategy for the next 3 to 4 years. We're holding a Facebook Live event very soon to that end to gain some customer input into that. And that strategy really is going to focus on some of our core challenges as a provider that's spread very geographically. And we're going to be looking at local communities, how we build those connections, how we deliver those services, and importantly, how each colleague that a customer of Stonewater will come into contact with will act with that right level of empathy, that right level of understanding. And ultimately, we'll be doing our bit to reinforce the positive of social housing and move us away from some of the downside that we hear through campaigns, unfortunately, like Stop Social Housing Stigma. So those will be some of the changes that we're coming for. But ultimately, I think the biggest change that we'll be driving in when a customer interacts with us is around our honesty about the progress and the challenges, and really talking openly about that as we move forward. And as I said earlier, we'll aim to be perfect every time, but we know that things will go awry and things will go wrong. But what we can assure customers of is that we will listen and we will learn and we will continuously keep improving.
Brilliant. Thanks, David. That sounds ideal. But Joe, from your NHS perspective, what would you say to board members who still see tenant engagement as a nice to have rather than central to every function, every role?
I would have to politely disagree. I mean, I think it absolutely is not an add-on, a nice to have if you've got time. You know, I think resident board members should now see resident voice and resident views as a really key source of assurance in everything they've got to do. And it's, you know, it's a tough job being a board member at the moment in the sector, but actually kind of and there are difficult decisions to be made, and there are really fundamental things to think about in terms of how organisations go forward. But if you don't have resident views as part of that decision making, then whatever you do could well be at odds with what customers want. So I think absolutely not an add-on. It is central to kind of compliance and that grading that Joseph and David have been talking about. But it's not just that. It's important because that's what we're here to do. Ultimately, we're here for our residents. And if we're not listening to them, then kind of what is the point? And, you know, and I think there's sometimes sort of reservations, I guess, about getting residents really involved in that decision making, because, you know, the sector is very complex, the way it's run is complex, but actually the challenge is making that accessible and people can understand it and have those discussions and engage in those debates, because there's nothing that if it's too complex to understand, then like, you're not explaining it right, I think. So there are challenges there. So yes, it would be a polite disagreement with any board members who shared that idea.
Yeah. And I think it comes down to that thing. It's like, how do you know what your customers want if you're not asking them? So that's basics, isn't it? So there have been some brilliant examples of how we're going to build on a better relationship today, and a definite desire from all of you guys, for sure, to do that. So Thank you all for your honesty and your conversation. But before we wrap up, I'd like to get one final thought from each of you about what is the one thing landlords should do to rebuild trust with customers. Let's go with Joseph as our customer.
It's, as I've been saying all the way through, you know, we've got to join together. It's collaborative work. It's no longer the housing association and the resident. It needs to be the two together working in partnership, which is what Together with Tenants was all about. I really loved the philosophy behind it, that if we work together, we can make it better. I know it seems like a weird way of putting it, but that's just me. That's the way I see things. So it's very much about let's join up, let's do it, and we can make this sector so much better.
Lovely. That's a great answer, Joseph. What about you, Jo?
Yeah, I think for me, it's about communication, that two-way communication. So listening and making sure you're creating space to do that in a way that suits residents, but also kind of that feedback loop that David was talking about around communicating. We know things go wrong sometimes, that's life, but just making sure you communicate. So that for me is the key takeaway.
Thank you, Joe. And what about you, David?
I think simply put, on the back of the conversation, together we're better, and each of us should strive for that day in, day out.
Excellent. So I think you're all sort of much on a theme there. Collaborate, listen, do it together. Lovely. So thank you, David, Joe and Joseph, for joining us. And thank you to every one of our listeners for listening to this episode of On the Air. We'll be back soon with another episode on Season 6.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the latest episode of On the Air. We'll be publishing a new episode again soon. To stay up to date, subscribe to our channel. Thanks again for listening, and don't forget to share your thoughts with us on LinkedIn by typing hashtag SW on the air.